Good Thursday afternoon. Welcome into Grant and Danny. It's July 24th, 2025. Just after 2 o'clock, we are in the Navy Yard, Half Street Studios, four blocks from the Nats Park center field gate. We will be here until 6:30, keeping you company on the Fan. We got a nice show planned for you, including Commanders tight end Ben Sinnott from training camp coming up in about 45 minutes at 2:45. Rookie running back Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt, who I think is actually going to make the team as a seventh-round pick.
I do, too.
5:45, Merritt will be on the program today. And our buddy Eric Flack with the latest on a stadium deal. That's coming up at 3:30. Speaking of the latest on a stadium deal, Danny, it's a thing. We've got ourselves an agreement. Next stop, a vote that seems to be set for 1 week from today.
Short of something crazy, and again, it is D.C. politics. This is something crazy. Is it's just Wednesday or Thursday or any day that they meet. Could absolutely be a thing. So right now, all the ducks look like they're lined up and we're waiting for an announcement. And the mayor was on with the Junks this morning. The momentum is very, very real. And Phil Mendelson, his folks released some information about, hey, here's how the deal's been improved to our liking. It greatly benefits the district. Makes a lot of sense. It all seems good.
They say that deaths come in threes. We had the stunning death of Ozzy Osbourne just a couple of days ago. That was jarring. And today we found out that Hulk Hogan, at 71 years old, suffered cardiac arrest in his home in Florida. And he is tragically no longer with us. Old Terry Bollea, Danny, the Hawkster, ready to tear a yellow t-shirt. One of the biggest entertainment icons of all time. I actually saw this tweet today. I want to read this and get your reaction about 71-year-old Hulk Hogan dying. I feel like everyone's got a Hulk Hogan story.
Yep.
Everyone's got a Hulk Hogan memory. If you're older than maybe 30, because I was like singing his theme song, and Toby and Ryan and a bunch of people were like, what is
that?
What
are you talking about? Yeah.
But, so I think you got to be, what's the age group?
If you're north of 37, 38, you saw some of it. If you're my age, you lived it.
So it's young. I'm going to say younger than that because I am 37, and Hulk Hogan was still a superstar.
Yeah, like you saw a lot of it. You probably saw his NWO days.
Exactly.
And, you know,
I'm going to lower the bar to say if you're in your 30s, certainly over like 32, 33, you don't need any part of a history lesson on Hulk Hogan.
Right.
If you're younger than that, maybe you do. But this is Dave Meltzer's tweet, who covers wrestling and mixed martial arts and other combat sports. He said, Hulk Hogan died at 71 today. He's probably the most famous pro wrestler who ever lived, and more people paid to see him perform over the course of his career than any other person. Thanks for the memories. Is that true, do we think?
Yeah.
More so than any musician, like Paul McCartney, hasn't had more people pay to see him over 50 years or whatever than Hulk Hogan. Certainly in sports entertainment, I would agree with that. But that's in the conversation, maybe, that in terms of buying a ticket, comedian, musician, entertainer, athlete, did more people pay to see Hulk Hogan than anybody else?
Maybe. I mean, you pay the everything from the pay-per-view to the live ticket to everything else. I mean, there was never an off switch for the guy. Like, this took wrestling from this territorial, you know, these weird backroom promotions at like Moose Lodges and assembly halls and kind of this traveling road show where it was sort of a one-off, as you know, part with Vince McMahon conglomerating all this stuff into one big massive company where there are no nights off for this guy. Like every second of every day, he'd wake up, Terry Bollea, like, you know, brush his teeth and he comes out and he's Hulk Hogan. Like there's no off switch. It's appearances, it's TV things, it's acting, it's being in movies, it's, you know, carrying every main event, every city they went to, every Saturday morning watching Mean Gene Okerlund recap the week's events was a must-see thing for, again, every kid my age before you had the regularities of Monday Night Raw or Nitro or Thursday Night SmackDown, any of these things that were normal. It was still this made for TV, but live touring show things. You didn't have digital. You didn't have downloads. It was just, you catch what you could, right? And these pay-per-views, these WrestleManias, these unbelievable national events for something that was fringe only a couple of years ago, it all was because of that guy. Like, there were great wrestlers. There were Hall of Fame dudes, and there are people that are really important that laid the groundwork for it. There has never been a fame rocket ship that took something from weird outsider, a couple of guys who liked it, knew about it, and to the absolute 100% mainstream consciousness. Lunchboxes, backpacks, every bit of merchandise under the sun featured that guy.
Well, there were characters before him, and there have been characters after
absolutely.
Him in wrestling, clearly. But his ability to kind of establish himself as such a unique wrestler that had never existed before,
mm-hmm.
just the, you know something, brother? Like,
right.
everyone, there was a little bit of him in every good wrestling character after that.
Yes.
You couldn't be a heel, a face, didn't matter. If you didn't have a little bit of Hulk Hogan's shtick in you, you were never going to get over it. You were never going to be any kind of a legend in the wrestling game. He headlined 8 of the first 9 editions of WrestleMania.
Yeah.
8 of 9. I couldn't believe that when I read that today. Think about what that means in terms of him carrying the company. The notion that someone would headline a WrestleMania now more than 2 or 3 years in a row is unthinkable. But in the first 9 years, as they built this thing up from the ground, the first 9 WrestleManias, he headlined every single one of them but WrestleMania 4, and I don't know why it wasn't, if they just had someone else they gave a
push.
He
was like doing a movie, I think.
I bet you he's either acting, adding to his fame and the company's fame, or it's possible he was injured. But WrestleManias 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, he was the headliner. I try not with wrestling to get into the stats of like how many time champion and, you know, whatever, because I think people know it's not like you beat everyone. It's that you were written
scripted,
to beat everyone.
Scripted.
Having
bowling.
Said that, it's the accomplishment of the reason you win every time is because if you lost, it would be bad for business. You're that over, as they say, right? You're that popular, basically. So I say that to bring up that he ran as champion, still a record, 1,474 days in a row. People get bored of the same guy as champion.
Yeah.
You can't be a champion for a year without losing, or 2 years. People turn on you. 4+ years where he was the champion, and everyone goes, dude, it's scripted. Who cares? It's not like he actually won all those matches by being a good wrestler. You're missing the point.
Mm-hmm.
For a 4+ year run, they never thought about doing anything else other than having Hulk Hogan go out there and defend his title successfully. The first wrestler to win consecutive Royal Rumble matches, which now is something that is reserved for the greats, the GOATs, the Hall of Famers. And the last thing I'll say wrestling-wise, so this was before my time, but when I was a kid, what I knew of Hulk Hogan, Danny, was the heat of the WCW versus WWF battle for Monday night. It was Nitro versus Raw. Do you remember that time?
Oh, of course. Yeah, I was in college.
I was a huge WWF fan. Stone Cold, The Rock, The Undertaker, Kane, The Generation X, Mankind. Like, that Attitude Era in the late 90s. Nothing better than that. Monday night with my brothers watching wrestling. I never watched WCW. I thought it stunk. And you very rarely liked both a lot. Like, you had to pick one. They were feuding with each other. Unless the Hulkster was on the screen. And at that time, as you said, it was mostly New World Order, NWO, or NWO Wolfpack, or whatever they're after. But we were all WWF all the time. Until you found out, you flipped over and you saw Hulk's music was playing, or NWO's music was playing, and he was making his way down to the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had to see what he was going to do. Even if you hated WCW and you loved WWF, doesn't matter. Hulk Hogan bridged that. That's what I knew of him. But because I knew that guy and I knew some of the backstory, we would rent the old movies, VHSs at Blockbuster, him versus Andre the Giant, that epic back and forth in the early
80s. WrestleMania 3 in the Silverdome.
Dude, that was your time, not
yes.
mine. That was before I was born. But you had to...
The whole country watched it, man.
I guarantee you I rented him versus Andre the Giant's like big matches. If I rented them 5 times, I rented them 25 times.
90-some thousand people at the Silverdome. And
which one was that?
That's 3. When he, again, I think the numbers vary as to the exact attendance. Who knows? The point is, think of that scope of a sporting event that, again, is scripted wrestling entertainment.
Well, let me give you bigger numbers than that. So are you referencing, it doesn't list the name of the event here, but February 5th, 1988, he had a match with Andre the Giant on WWF, the main event. Would that have been it?
No, this is WrestleMania 3.
Okay, so we can go back to that one in a minute. When did he lift Andre the Giant up?
WrestleMania 3.
Okay, so then that was even maybe a bigger deal. But listen to these numbers I just saw. So this is the main event, which was a pay-per-view, I guess, or the version of it back then, in 88. An American television viewership record for wrestling. They got a 15 share.
Yeah.
Not 15 million people. 15% of people that were watching television in that moment were watching Hulk Hogan against Andre the Giant.
I can't explain this to people.
33 million viewers. Mm-hmm. That is more than NFL Sunday games are getting. And all they do is dominate the ratings.
Right.
There haven't been 33 million people in D.C. watching a Commanders game. Well, period, watching a Commanders game in a long, long time. Now, the Super Bowl is going to be 100 plus million. I mean, the huge NFL events. But, like, what is Sunday Night Football? What is Monday Night Football?
Right.
I don't think 33 million people at a time are necessarily watching.
Yeah, you get, like, Chiefs-Bills. Maybe you'd get that, but that's not the point.
The NBA Finals gets 5 million or something.
Yeah, there's fewer people in the country at that point, by the way. This is, you know, almost 40 years ago. It was the moment. It was the whole culture. Every walk of life, every corner of America was tuned into that. To see Hulk Hogan pick up this 600-pound dude, this 7'6", whatever the monster that Andre the Giant was, he made Hulk Hogan, who's 6'7", 300-some pounds, look tiny standing next to him. He picked him up and body slammed him. And every documentary you've seen, every sort of moment about that since then was nobody was really sure if that was going to be allowed to happen. Like, it was, you're cool with it? Yeah, I guess. Like, no one was sure if Andre the Giant, who could barely move around at that point because his back was bothering him so bad, not to be flippant about it.
No,
like,
I know.
Are you gonna let this happen? He's like, eh. No one was really sure until it happened. And it was like this, oh my God, jaw-dropping moment. He picks him up, suplex, does his leg drop, pandemonium across the country. It then comes to you're finding this just the time we were in where you had clearly defined sort of America versus Cold War Russia.
I was going to say, America versus Iran. The element of this is so big with him being, you know, Mr. America,
and,
so to speak.
And so it wouldn't have happened if he was Terry Bolder, which is how he started when he was wrestling in Georgia. But when he's Hulk Hogan rolling in, waving the American flag against incredible villains, Nikolai Volkoff and the Iron Sheik, it was perfect. Like, it was, it captured the time.
The patriotism
perfectly.
Of
yes.
it.
Yes.
No, it was perfect. 93,000, you said.
Mm-hmm.
93,000. I'm looking at the attendance here at the Pontiac Silverdome. So this is WrestleMania 3. This is the match that he's most known for when he overtook Andre the Giant.
Look at this. He's found it. I don't believe it. I don't believe it. I'm dropping a big leg. Over for the cover. It's over.
Listen. Chills. There's a weather system in my eyes again.
525 pounds.
Oh, my God.
Andre the Giant.
Oh, my God, dude.
You can't slam him. Just did.
He just did.
Now, we probably should wait longer into the Hulk Hogan conversation before I bring this up. But one of my favorite movies when I was super young was Suburban Commando.
I think it's a 4 stars out of 10 on IMDb.
It is a terrible
sure
movie.
Is.
Terrible. But for some reason, I don't know if it was made by like WWF Pictures or whatever. It had a bunch of WWE guys in there.
Yeah.
Undertaker was one of the bad guys that he was from another planet that Hulk Hogan was like fighting. Really, really funny movie. As a kid, though, it's you don't know how cheesy or terrible it is.
Yeah, it's the greatest thing ever.
It's just the wrestlers, they're all acting in it. But he was in a bunch of movies,
yeah.
A bunch of TV shows. And you could say the same about John Cena, I guess. I think he's probably got more acting chops. It's not like Hulk Hogan was winning Academy Awards. Like, when you look up his bio, it says professional wrestler, television personality, actor. I'm not sitting here going to pretend like he had range like Steph Curry or something, but he was just Hulk Hogan and stuff, man. Everyone just wanted him to be in things because from a pop culture standpoint, he was iconic.
It's hard to overstate, and you'll never see anything like this now because we've seen it before, if that makes any sense. Like, the biggest star in the WWE, like, as you mentioned, like a Rock or a John Cena, they've gone on to more money and fame and acting roles and stuff, and you've seen guys be wildly successful. That's not the metric. You'll never have somebody who crosses over so that everybody knows and is interested in one way or the other that kind of a character from wrestling. You could have, again, huge rosters that go on to great careers. I mean, there are plenty of guys now and over the last 20, 30 years who have made incredible marks. Again, we already pointed out Cena, Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock, etc.
Yeah, guys currently that carry the company like a Cody Rhodes, a Seth Rollins,
exactly.
A Roman Reigns, they're going to go down in the WWE Hall of Fame, but their ceiling is so much lower than what was even possible back then.
They're doing awesome and good for them. This is a different category altogether. The seminal moments of some of the wrestling feuds and partnering with other heroes and those kind of moments that the rivalries that he had, it was perfect. It was all and no one had ever seen that stuff before. Again, the hardcore fans who were fans of his when he was, again, Terry Bolder in Georgia, already sort of knew that kind of stuff. The rest of the country was introduced to this thing all at the same time, and this was your alpha, this was the star that the whole thing was built around.
I don't think you can say this about other sports, but if Hulk Hogan doesn't exist as a character, right? If Terry Bollea doesn't exist as a human being, wrestling probably is not a thing on Netflix right now.
100%.
You know, the WWF, which is now the WWE, is not selling out arenas in 2025 and coming to D.C. twice a year.
100%.
It just doesn't exist. And I don't think you could say that about a single baseball player or football player. I mean, there are all-time legends that change the game for the better, like Jackie Robinson, who made it possible for, you know, an entire group of people who was incorrectly not allowed to play. I'm not saying there aren't other super important figures. I'm just saying, from the standpoint of the actual existence of the sport, like, Hulk Hogan made wrestling a thing.
There's a BC and an AD to it. Like, Correct. There's a year zero. Before Hulk Hogan, you know, it's chugging along, doing whatever it can, then it became this, you know, mega bit of entertainment.
There's also this. I mentioned this in passing with Ozzy a couple of days ago, and Ozzy Osbourne doesn't hit me quite as hard, not to take away from him, and I hope it doesn't sound that way, but I'm just not a music guy. I know a couple of the songs, and I've actually been doing a deeper dive on Spotify, and, like, obviously an unbelievable talent. But with Hulk Hogan specifically, the relatability for everyone of the nostalgia of your past is huge. But also, it's just the coming to grips with your own mortality, in a sense, as you get older, that your people are dying.
Exactly where I was going
to
go.
Pretty hard to deal with. And for a lot of us, I'm in the younger portion of the era of a lot of our listeners, maybe in my 30s. You're obviously mid-40s. There are people listening that are 50, 60, whatever. I get that. But when you start, like, the fact that he's 71 is insane to me.
Mm-hmm.
I know that this isn't how time works, because he was 50 back then at the end of the road. But, like, if you would have said, my first thought would have been, like, I don't know, is he 62? Like, 71 just seems way too old. But that also speaks to how old I am, that I don't think about every single day.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of this, is just, oh, man. Like, my guys are dying. I say this all the time with coaches and managers. The people, I watched Miguel Cairo play for the Reds. Now he's managing the Nats. When I was a little kid, managers were players that you don't remember playing.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's just a bunch of dudes whose cards I collected. You get older.
Yeah.
Time never stops.
Time is marked, yeah.
This was Hulk Hogan's Hall of Fame speech. I don't know how, but he was apparently a two-time Hall of Fame inductee. I don't know how that even happens.
He was removed after some...
is that what happened?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. There were some transgressions along
the way. Terrible comments that were caught on tape.
Yes. That is certainly part of the legacy and the narrative. All right. Let's hear from his Hall of Fame speech.
The strongest force in the universe is not Hulkamania. The strongest force in the universe, after this, you can sit down. It's you wrestling fans. You guys are the ones that keep this business alive. You guys are the ones that make everybody out here, from Jericho, Triple H, the Giant, everybody, Batista, fight their hearts out every night. It's because of you fans that there is a wrestling business. You guys were awesome.
Come on, man. Let's go to Brian in Maine, who wants to hop in, listening on the Odyssey app. What's up, Brian? How are you?
Hey, boys. How are you?
What's up, buddy?
Hey, I want to just say, I grew up in the United States military. My father served 30 years active duty in the U.S. Air Force. We lived on three different continents. We lived in four different countries. We visited close to 50 different countries. Everywhere that I went as a kid, Hulk Hogan was America.
Yep.
You know, he was the face of America. And Danny, there was a period in the mid-80s when my dad was stationed at the Pentagon. And in 1985 or so, in West Springfield, Virginia, Media General Cable showed up for the very first time and wired our neighborhood for cable. And about a year and a half later, the very first pay-per-view event I ever begged my parents to buy was WrestleMania III. And I recorded it on VHS. I must have watched it 150 times. I will never forget that day.
100%.
What a great story.
Because again, I'm old enough. I live in a pre-cable world. If you want to change your channel? Stand up, walk your ass over there, and you turn the knob. Is this one good? Is this one good? Is this one good? when we got wired, and we didn't get it till after WrestleMania happened. Cable was only was a year later for us, just where we happened to be living. So you had to go. I went to my friend's house, and it was like there were 50 people gathered around, eating cake and punch and watching this thing, the spectacle. And half the adults were like, "What is this?" And by the end, they're rooting and hollering for Hogan too.
You don't remember Mr. Nanny?
Not well. Is that on the resume?
I'm surprised you don't remember it. It's another one. I was a kid, and he was basically played a nanny and had to watch two kids, and they gave him a hard time.
Oh, that's tough.
You don't remember that movie?
I don't. I mean, because I remember No Holds Barred very well.
You need to up your Hulk Hogan actor game a little bit, because Suburban Commando is getting slept on a little bit by you as well. Ben Sinnott of the Commanders is going to be on the show at 2:45 from training camp. There is some Commanders news to tend to today as well. A stadium deal is in place. It's official. A vote is coming. We'll give you all the details next on The Fan.
We wanted to hear from people, and overwhelmingly, people have said, get this deal done, but do it in a way that's smart, that's responsible, that prioritizes these district resources so that we get a tremendous return on our investment. And that's ultimately what we're working towards. And just stay tuned. And much as I listen to you all at 106.7 The Fan, and which I do all the time, you all should stay tuned to Channel 13 and see what the D.C. Council is doing in terms of the stadium. We should have some good news to report.
Those Channel 13 numbies have skyrocketed.
Big numbies.
Over the last couple of days. Welcome back. That was Kenyon McDuffie, D.C. City Council, on the show yesterday. We had Phil Mendelson, the chair, 2 days ago, and then his assistant chair, chair tempore, whatever terminology we're going to use for that, McDuffie on yesterday. And today, Mendelson made the announcement that a deal has been struck, and that a vote, it sounds like, is coming reportedly on August 1st. Now, we'll get the latest from Eric Flack coming up at about 3:30 on what this means exactly. Is this a touchdown? Does this mean the ball's across the goal line? Do we now get to do a victory dance, or do we all wait and see what the president's going to do based on his veiled threat from over the weekend? Can we actually celebrate a stadium in D.C.? Is today the day to do that, or should we wait until August 1st after the vote? Is that even the time to do it? You know, if they vote and it's over, what about Trump?
Is it, though?
What about some other elements of this? But read the statement from Mendelson, because they changed some of the terms. And credit to the team on this, Danny. They put forth an agreement with the mayor. The city council had issues. The team made several changes. And the city council is now ready to, it sounds like, accept those changes.
Yeah, here is the press release. D.C. Council Chairman Phil Mendelson announced today that the Committee of the Whole will hold a vote on the Robert F. Kennedy Campus Redevelopment Act of 2025. Quote, today we're scheduling a vote for Friday, August 1st, 2025, to consider the RFK campus legislation, Mendelson said. We've been working with the Washington Commanders for several weeks, and we feel we have a much improved agreement that would bring the team back to their historical home, as well as develop the land around the RFK campus. It's clear that the Commanders showed, through their negotiations, their commitment to the district, and their willingness to consider what's in the best interest of our citizens. The process working with the Commanders has been extremely productive, and they've been a cooperative partner. Overwhelmingly, residents have asked the council for due diligence on this multi-billion-dollar deal, and under immense outside pressure to rush the process, I feel that along with the next week's hearings, the council will have what's needed to move forward with a vote. The Committee of the Whole and the Committee on Business and Economic Development will hold a public hearing on the legislation on July 29th and a hearing with government and team officials on July 30th.
We got ourselves a deal. Now let's vote. I don't think any of this happens if the vote's not definitively a yes. Obviously, Mendelson's a yes now, wasn't before. He told us as much multiple times over. So that's now five. But we're not doing a vote on the first. We're not reaching an agreement on these changed terms if that doesn't mean that the vote is going to come back with seven plus yeses, right? I mean, this means they've agreed on the terms. The vote's just a formality then.
You would think that's how it... Because that would certainly make sense.
Because they could have had a vote before. It just would have been a no because they didn't like the terms.
Yeah, you wouldn't go through all this, seem to address everybody's concerns, or at least some of the concerns, right? You're compromising. You probably have to give a little. So is the team. To get these concessions, we'll go through what those are, where there's just more revenue coming back to the city that wasn't designed to. Again, the team is spending more. They should get more back sooner. The city, though, is spending some. They should get some back, too. And it wasn't really slated to do that as much, according to them, for the initial legislation. So it has since been changed. You would think that everybody now, or enough people, are on board with the amended version to get your requisite number of yeses.
The key answer that everybody needs here to the question of the day on this is, how has the deal changed, right? What is different? Why was DC a no previously, and now they're a yes? So that starts with revenues from the site. The term sheet provided that all revenues, including tax revenues generated at the stadium, go to the Commanders or to a stadium reinvestment fund. The Commanders have agreed that the following revenues instead will go to the district. This is what you just referenced. Instead of them getting all the revenues, $260 million parking revenues from non-stadium event days, team estimates $170 million or higher. Parking was the biggest fly in the ointment we heard from every single person that came on, not just in the case of, say, Charles Allen, where it was too much parking or he didn't want that many parking garages, but the actual financials. Why can't we make money as a city on non-Commanders-related events that we're holding in the city, concerts and other things at that venue? Well, the team caved on that a little bit, $260 million worth. So they'll get money for those structures, and the team will also ultimately get paid plenty from the parking as well. $112 million parking taxes, 18% rate, goes to the city. $54 million sales tax on merchandise, which is a little over 10%, will go to the city. $248 million sales tax on food and beverage, about 10% of what they're raking at the stadium, will go to the city, which goes for $674 million total over 30 years. So Mendelsohn, Allen, the holdout, so to speak, were able to negotiate what is $674 million more dollars coming to the city over 30 years based on what's going on at that stadium.
Right. And so the and basically, there was very little of that, or none of that, was slated to go back. Because again, the way I would describe it to folks who are, some of the numbers might be dizzying. Imagine you and your buddy found a company, and he puts in a dollar, and you put in nine. When profits start to come in, if the company does well, the guy that put in nine would probably want more money back first. So everything was slanted, understandably, towards the football team, who's spending 2.6 or 7, whatever the number is, billions of dollars to help build the stadium. And they're like, we'd like to recoup our investment pretty fast so we can actually start earning some money here and go into the green. Very reasonable. The city's going, totally, you guys deserve the lion's share. They've gotten that here. So an 18% rate, for example, on parking taxes, that's not 100%. The team is keeping way more than the city will. But at least they're getting something for an edifice that they're going to help build, where there are days that have nothing to do with football, that if someone wants to go to lunch at Panera and park there, the city should get something out of that. And that's something. What the new deal is, yeah.
Which is what they wanted. Mm-hmm. And I think with most of this, I didn't know about all of it, but with a lot of it, the team was always going to be willing to play ball to some extent, because you're not just going to throw an offer out there and then not negotiate some. Other areas where it was improved, I'll use that word because that's what Mendelsohn uses, but became more city-friendly, I'll say. Community benefits fund, team offices, senior leadership and sales office will locate in the district. That's huge. Remember, originally the team said they did not want to move all of the people that have been at FedEx, now Northwest Stadium. They've moved now over to the University of Maryland. They want their offices and the team to be together. The way it was described to me at one point in time was they want to basically draft off of the momentum of Quinn and Peters and the football team with their business. You want everyone under one roof. They decided, you know what, if that's a deal breaker for you guys and you need a bunch of people over there spending money every day, we'll make that work. Development milestones, including the council restructuring debt financing, the council legislation redirecting $600 million from the sports facility fee, these little nuanced things. And then there were some other things that they listed. Here's my bottom line on this. In the same way that when the team and the mayor put out the dossier with all of the information, some of it is probably a little bit better than it's ultimately going to work out to be financially, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the exact same way. When they put out their rebuttal of how many more million, we just negotiated to get you guys $674 million. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know if it turns out to be that good or not. I think by and large, they had to do something. Every one of the council members wanted to just be involved, basically. Mendelsohn's big issue, I think, all along was the mayor did it without him. And so he got to have his big political victory lap and his big dog and pony show. Is some of it actually trying to get a better deal for the city? Of course.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of it was politics. I need to
be involved.
I need to have my name on it. I need my thing for my guy that I need to take care of because he took care of me before. I think there was a lot of that. And as soon as everyone gets, you know, not in a nefarious way, but whatever they need put in their hand, now all of a sudden They back you. It was always going to take a little bit of time, but if they really do vote on August 1st, that's about as good as you could have asked for.
Without a doubt. Yeah, again, with the quick turnaround, with, you know, you went from, now in real time, it seemed like it was taking forever, but by the standard of how these processes go, this was very quick from Congress midnight hour vote gives the land to DC. I put that in quotes because whether it's given or leased or whatever, who knows. But when it goes from that to we're voting on August 1st, it's a matter of months, which is pretty damn fast as far as DC politics goes.
Matter of weeks, or yeah, totally. It's a couple months.
You know?
So the only thing I would say to that, because I think you're right, the hysteria, maybe that's overblown, but the anxiety and the nerves and whatever else there was involved, it was not over how long they had taken. It was over the idea that there wasn't any public progress yet, that there was no tangible evidence of anything changing yet, and how long it could take. Because what was being said was the fall. It wasn't, you know, if people came on the show, if Charles Allen, when we last talked to him, or Parker, or White, or any of the guys that came on our show, came on and said, look, give us a couple weeks. And give us until July 24th. We'll get back to you with a new deal. And they couldn't have done that, but I'm just using this as an example. Early August, first couple days of August, there's a good chance we could have a vote. Then there would have been none of the hysteria and the anxiety and people being very upset and worked up. So there's going to be, I'm sure, plenty of people who are going to say, oh my gosh, the you guys overrated, not us specifically, but whoever, like the media, the fans, anybody that was worried that this wasn't going to happen if it ends up being voted on August 1st and everything goes through and seamlessly. But my point to that would be wrong. Because people weren't saying, this should have been done already. It had to be done by July 10th. It had to be done by July 15th. It was the lack of progress. And the people that were speaking on the council were saying, fall, fall, fall. And the team was saying, that doesn't work for us. We'll lose out on the Women's World Cup, which should be the first marquee event in this new stadium. We will lose out on these other couple of things possibly. So when they were saying fall, that's too long. When Mendelsohn came on and he said, it's only been 7 weeks or whatever he said, if he would have said, when we were asking for a lot of questions about timeline and updates, and I said point blank, are you pretty confident you can have a vote before September 1st? Well, I'm not going to talk about the timeline. I certainly wouldn't put a clock on this thing. Well, 24 hours later, he's announcing the deal.
He's like, here's a clock. It's next week.
You can't get upset for us when I don't want to say we were lied to, but misled is one way to put it, or just not given any information. We were kept in the dark. I'm always annoyed when teams do that. When, like, they don't give you anything, and then they go, oh, you've got this wrong. You wrote this story wrong. This player is actually having a much better year. It's like, I'm here every day. You could tell me, and I could be more educated. You choose not to. You don't get to get upset when I'm not educated. And so that's what I would say is I think there was just a fear that the lack of progress would continue for an extended period of time, and it turns out that maybe it all happened very quickly. I don't know if the Trump tweets of this weekend
had anything who can say
to do with it, but it all changed very fast, and at least publicly, we went from hearing it's going to be in the fall, most likely, to an agreement this week, and that's awesome.
Yeah, and remember, very similarly with Snyder, right? On the opposite end of this thing, we went within a month from defiant, angry letters through attorneys, criticizing people, lashing out on the attack, to like almost exactly 30 days later, I've contracted with Bank of America to get ready to sell this thing. That something happened very, very quickly in there, and something happened very, very quickly here too. I don't know what it was. I look forward to somebody writing a long form article or a short book about it. I'll read it then. But at the end of the day, this again is as good as you could have hoped for at this moment.
It's also possible because we were kept in the dark so much that they were saying publicly something that wasn't 100% accurate, just kind of covering their bases, and that there was actually a ton of progress being made little by little the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that a month ago, they were closing in. That 2 weeks ago.
That's honestly the sense I have.
They had a nice dinner, remember, with the council, the team.
Cafe Milano.
And the council was at Cafe Milano just a couple of weeks ago. They might have been hammering out some final details then, for all we know. What I can't answer is, why have we had four council members on who have essentially said nothing about this thing being close to being done? I don't know why that would have behooved them or who benefits from that. But, you know, all we can do is all we can do. But it looks like this thing's a go. As of right now, there's still possible hurdles to be cleared, and in D.C., it's never over until that shovel's in the ground. I guess even when the shovel's in the ground, someone could come stop the shoveling at some point.
Whoa, are you shoveling here, left to right? No.
They're going to be lining up for the opening kickoff in 2030 before we find out that, actually, never mind, you guys can't use this
stadium. Guy walks across the field with a warrant, you know? You've been served.
Ben Sinnott caught just five passes as a rookie. He was a second-round pick. taken number 53 overall. This team's got to get something out of the big 6 foot 4 inch tight end this year. He will join us next on Grant and Danny.
Beats him, Ben Sinnott. Fake it, Mariota throws it. Caught by Sinnott. Touchdown. The first of his NFL career. Rookie out of Kansas State.
You don't want to redshirt your second round pick very often, but that's effectively what happened for Ben Sinnott last year with the Washington Commanders. Look at his play time on offense, you know, non-special teams work. It was pretty sparing. Played on 311 snaps, which was 27% of the team's reps, which is more than you may have thought, but a lot of that was in line as a blocker.
Uh-huh.
You look at targets and actual involvement in the passing game, there's not a whole lot on the ledger. 5 targets, 5 catches, 28 yards, averaged about 5.5 yards per catch, and did score that one lone touchdown. Caught up with him at training camp today after what was practice number 2 of camp, and asked Ben Sinnott what he thinks about a rookie year where, yeah, he didn't catch a whole lot of passes, but that had a lot to do with his usage.
I think it was a good year, just being able to have a good amount of playing time that first year and be able to just kind of see where you fall and see where the pieces fit with a really competitive tight end room. But I'm just really looking forward to growing and continuing to build that confidence into year 2. Being able to have all that data to look at from year 1 and just make those improvements as they come.
So when you took that data, as you called it, like, what are the things you said, okay, here are a few areas where I really want to get better? Is it physical or other things?
It's physical, it's mental. From a physical aspect, I mean, top of routes and keep my feet on the ground on contact were the two that me and Coach Rye really focused on and what I noticed. And I think from the mental game is just continuing to learn football. Knowing the fronts, knowing what coverage is, knowing the adjustments in every play design and just being able to go out there and play fast. And repetition builds that confidence. And I think as I continue to get those reps and through OTAs and through camp, it's just going to continue to stack and you're going to see improvements. So,
is that one of those things where you feel like you probably know a lot of ball and then you get to the NFL and you're like, oh my God, there's so many things I had no idea I didn't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's always something to learn. This game is so complex, and just being able to keep up, and the game changes so much from when Zach even started 13 years ago. So just being able to improvise and adapt, and there's new coverages, there's new fronts, there's different ways these DCs are trying to attack the offense. So being able to just continue to learn, it's going to be a never-ending thing, and I'm up for it, and it's been a blessing to be able to have the guys and the knowledge that I have to pick from. So
we didn't see you get overly involved in the passing game last year, but in the preseason, you made some really impressive plays after the catch. And I'm curious, do you feel like you're just an opportunity away from kind of showing what you can do? And that was part of it last year, that in terms of not having a lot of catches or whatever, that basically that you're in a loaded room with a future Hall of Famer.
Yeah, definitely. Opportunities are everything, especially in this league and what system you're in. So I'm looking forward to this year, hopefully get some more opportunities to show what I can do. And I think a big thing is in that preseason, you're having fun and you're wanting to show what you can do. And I think a big part of my game is after the catch. So it's just having opportunities and being able to do what you need to do with the ball and extend plays for your team. So
lastly, now in football, when you're not training, doing things, what are the things that Ben Sinnott does that kind of makes you feel good?
Yeah, I love to golf. I grew up playing. It's one of my favorite hobbies. I love to play the video game and just hanging with my wife, watching a show, just relaxing and staying inside in the summer. Try not to get too in the humidity, but
you're breaking your rule today.
Yeah, exactly. It's different. When it's time to work, it's time to work. But being able to just spend time with my wife and get out on the golf course are my two favorite things.
What's the TV show you guys watch?
We're really into Survivor right now. We have watched a couple different seasons now, and we're trying to just continue to get at it. So we love the show. It's something, the twists and turns, and we really like it.
Appreciate you, man.
Yeah, thank you.
I love that answer from him when he said, I think a big part of my game is what I do after the catch. It's about having opportunities. Well, he hasn't gotten to show that at all. I go back to the preseason game against the Jets all the time. Because that was the one time we ever really saw it.
Yeah, we got one case of that.
He caught a ball in space, and he dragged like three dudes with him, and he broke a couple tackles. And quite literally, in my mind, he has lived off of that play since, where I go, I think he could be a pretty good NFL player. It's that snap, that preseason rep. Yeah. Because at the tight end position, they've got a guy in Zach Ertz who's the opposite of that. What he's got when he catches it is what he's going to get. He doesn't make the plays after the catch. If he's healthy, he's going to be the targeted key piece at tight end, but if he's not, Sinnott gets more chances, and I think that the stuff we've been asked to see him do, basically, you either don't notice because he's blocking at the line of scrimmage, or it's fairly uninteresting in the passing game. When he can catch the ball in some space, I think that's where he's got his special ability that made him a second-round pick, and we just didn't see any of it last year.
I wonder why there wasn't more emphasis there, or usage there, or because if it's the way I think of it is every team, every offensive coordinator, every quarterback, et cetera, you're judged on every single thing that you're doing. And you're basically saying, here's our best chance to matriculate the ball, to score, to move, to keep possession, et cetera. We're going to go with our best options. And way more often, their best options didn't include Ben Sinnott. At some point, I understand not every week, if a rookie tight end, when Zach Ertz was healthy, et cetera, but the way it looks to me is John Bates is a better blocker and Zach Ertz is a better receiver. So it doesn't leave much room for that third tight end in the mix. And that's what he was last year, was the third tight end. How much ascension happens this year with both of those guys back? They made it a point of paying pretty good money for John Bates, who's an excellent run blocker. He's basically having a sixth offensive lineman there. And that's kind of the intent. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I'd love to see, but that means probably at the expense of Zach Ertz. And I'm not necessarily willing to do that.
Von Miller spoke to the media today, one of the most entertaining introductory press conferences I've ever heard. And we'll talk about that, plus the Terry McLaurin holdout continuing, and then Jaden Daniels' observation from practice today for my time out in Ashburn. We'll get to all of that coming up on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.